Welcome to Office Hours aboard the Royal Caribbean Wonder of the Seas, one of the world's largest cruise ships. And this is the Groove Cruise. It's a cruise with nonstop DJs all over the ship. It was actually surprisingly hard for me to find a quiet place to go record and talk to you. This is one of those 360 videos, so you can turn the camera around. I'm in the back of the ship at the amphitheater, or I think they call it the Aqua Theater, where the headlining DJs usually play. It's about 12 noon here, and the DJ sets don't start until, on the back side of the ship, don't start until like 3 p.m. There are DJ sets everywhere, all over the boat. The casino, not the buffet, surprisingly, but every like open area on this giant ship, there are DJs going on. Which sounds like it would be overwhelming, but it's actually kind of awesome because it's like a buffet of dance music. So you can pick and choose the whatever artist you want to listen to at any given time. Or if you want to just go off to a pool somewhere and relax, you can still do that. But there's just DJs going on all the time. So that's kind of phenomenal. Loved it. It's our first Groove Cruise. And we will absolutely be signing up for these again and again. Totally amazing. And you don't think about how big of a business it is until you realize that there's about 6,000 people on the boat, each of which paid an average of $4,000 just to be here. 6,000 times 4,000, $24 million. Plus you start to throw in all the add-ons. There are tables, there are alcohol spends, all kinds of stuff. So this is a crazy big business. It's pretty wild. So let's go through your top voted questions from PollGab. The top voted question is from Frost, who says, what is your opinion on group managed service accounts versus service accounts? I've said this a few times, but I'm going to go into a little bit more details here. I don't do security work. I don't do security work of any form or fashion. And there are a few reasons why I don't do it. One is that it's very risky and there's not a lot of reward in it compared to like performance tuning. Security, people only want to pay out big money for security consulting after they've already been hacked. And at that point, it's totally an emergency. Like everybody, drop everything, we gotta do everything. I don't usually want to do like weekend and emergency type work if I can avoid it. I prefer doing things that are planned at least a few days ahead of time. So, you know, we're going to get together on these dates. Security work, you can get that doing like planned preparatory work ahead of time before customers get hacked. But the reality of that is it doesn't pay very well. It doesn't pay very well compared to like emergency performance tuning work. So I have this philosophy of I want to work as little as possible at helping people extract as much value as possible so that I can work a little bit of time and get paid a lot for doing valuable work so that I can spend as much time as I can on vacation and spending time with the people, my friends and family, people that I love. Because in my family, people tend to die young. They tend to have all kinds of reasons why they die young. Alcoholism. It's after 12 noon. You can't judge me, but that's my first drink as far as you know. So I just don't do security work. I haven't seen it as that high of value. I understand that it is valuable to companies, but it just doesn't tend to be a really high consulting income per person. There are million-dollar security projects, of course, but they tend to be spread across large groups of people. I'm not saying that you don't need it. I'm just explaining why. This is why I don't go into it at all. Like, I don't do any prep work on it. I couldn't tell you the slightest bit of background info on it. Just no clue. Next up, Elwood asks, what AI tool or skills do you recommend learning for SQL and Postgres DBAs to stay relevant? You're probably too young and attractive to remember this. But back about 20 years ago, there were these brand new things called search engines. I'm not telling you to Google for this. I'm going to explain this is going to mean something in terms of a story here. Like 20 years ago, there were these burgeoning things, brand new upstart called search engines. Before search engines like Google, there was Yahoo, which was a directory. People could submit their site to different categories, and then you would go to a category and you'd go through like alphabetical order, and that wouldn't make any sense because you wouldn't know which sites were really good, which ones were dead. So along came Google, and they changed everything with their site rank methodology. And there was a lot of competition for a while, and there is some competition again today in terms of search engines. The skill at that time was trying to find things on the internet that had a high quality, like a good BS detector. Your ability to look at a web page and understand whether or not the information on it was credible, whether it was relevant to you, you had to be able to sniff this out very quickly. And you also had to be really good at putting in the right terms into the search engine in order to get the answer that you want. I'll tell you an example of it from back when I really struggled with it back in the early 2000s. Was people were putting in their question into a search engine, how do I configure SQL Server memory? And what a lot of us learned really early on was you don't search for that because that's not in the content. The content didn't say, how do I search for SQL Server or how do I configure SQL Server memory? The content would say things like, here's how you set the max DOP setting, here's how you set the max memory setting, here's how you set the min memory setting. So you would put in the terms that would be relevant in your answers, not in your questions, and then that ended up paying off. Those kinds of skills are what you need to focus on again today in 2026 when using AI tools. It's less about the tool, it's more about understanding how to use these tools and to cultivate your BS detector. How to know when you're getting a bad answer from an LLM or generative language tool. I'll give you an example from my use of ChatGPT in the early days. Early on, we figured out that ChatGPT was just aggressively confident. Even when it didn't know what it was talking about, it would never say, well, I'm not too sure, but here's what I think the answer might be. It would just be like, here's the answer. I got the answer for you right here. So you had to cultivate a good BS detector. And one of the things I would do right after I got the answer is I would just type back in, bruh. Just B-R-U-H, bruh. And hit enter. That was it. And ChatGPT would then check itself and be like, oh, you know what? You caught me. That DMV doesn't actually exist. Oh, you know what? You caught me. Those columns won't work in that query. So just by simply reflecting it back on the model. Now, today's models are better, but that kind of trick still works, and the kinds of techniques that you use still work. So I would say rather than using a tool, focus on the techniques. And those techniques will likely be relevant to lots of different tools. Next up, G Surgeon says, what are the telltale signs that a database design has flaws? If the server has hardly any problems around CPU, memory, or I/O, the model is normalized, their foreign keys or indexes are indexed. So if performance isn't a problem and you're looking for problems to solve, what you want to do is turn to the people who have to write the queries and ask them, how long does it take for you to do your job? When you need to get stuff out of the database, are you frustrated with how long it takes to write the query to understand what's in the database? And sometimes with poor database designs, those people will tell you, oh my God, writing a query to get net profit per product is terrible because I have to join between 50 different tables. So that's where you start to unearth problems with, maybe we over-normalize. Now, you can't usually solve that on a living application by rewriting the data model. What you solve is writing reporting tables instead. But as long as performance is okay and people are having an easy enough time writing queries, then I'm fine with the data model. The problem isn't the model. Next up, Scottish TikToker asks, utility control point, have you ever found a use case? No. I've never heard of one either. Nope. Next up, Radic asks, last week you shared Andy Cutler's post about solo consultancy in 2025. It was an excellent post. Andy is a freelance consultant, has his own firm, and he blogged openly sharing the problems that he was having with generating income in 2025. Question continues, Andy argued that small companies are shifting from solo consultants to LLMs, which makes the market more difficult. Do you have similar observations, and do you think this is permanent or temporary? Well, this is like a flashback episode where we're going to go back like 20 years again. Let's go back like 25 years to around the turn of the century, around 99, 2000, 2001. Back then, if you were a small company and you needed IT work done, you contacted someone who lived in your area. Maybe you found them in the phone book. Maybe you found them through a friend of a friend. Maybe you found them through small business meetings at like a chamber of commerce. And that local jack of all trades did things like understanding how to find things on the internet or reading manuals. They would go read the manual. They would go buy books at bookstores. They wouldn't necessarily know any technology in depth, but they knew a lot of technologies and they knew how to learn and fix problems. And they were scattered all over the world. Every local city had lots of IT consultants. Well, then the internet started about, and remote access to PCs started about. We started getting things like PC Anywhere and Log Me In and remote desktops, so we could share someone else's desktop and walk them through things. Also, at the same time, there was this revolution around search engines. So you could go online and search for SQL Server Consultant and describe the problem that you were having. And suddenly, you could get someone who was actually an expert in the topic that you wanted, and they could connect in with you. Maybe you worked with them remotely, maybe you flew them across the country to solve a particular problem. And that really hurt local IT consultants. Local IT consultants just dive bombed after that. They had to specialize or else they were gonna die. And you saw some of them switch into like desktop support businesses. They would create small local shops to help your mom and grandpa deal with their computers. People would bring their physical computers in because those people didn't trust online help, which was probably smart. So that was a revolution for small consultancy at that time. Today, it's the same thing. Now, they don't even Google. Now they don't even Google for the problem in order to find it. Let me rephrase that. They'll Google for the problem and they'll get the AI snippet up at the top, or they'll ask an LLM and they'll get an answer directly from there. So they may not even see consultants who used to specialize in search engine marketing by like putting out all kinds of stuff out on the internet and then hoping people would find them. It will absolutely change the way that IT consultants earn their pay and also how they find customers. This is one of the reasons that I still do video, so that you understand who I am. You see me in TikTok, in Instagram, in Facebook, in YouTube, all these places, because I want to reach you outside of search engines. I want you to see me when just through your network of me putting out interesting content that you might consume passively for fun, not necessarily searching when you have a problem, so that you'll go, oh, when I have a SQL Server problem, I know I'll go, this person that I've seen talk all over the world getting drunk on cruise ships, but because he knows SQL Server, Azure SQL DB, whatever, that affords him that lifestyle, he can help us solve our problems. So I absolutely think it will change the way that marketing is done for these kinds of smaller consultant firms. And I do think that that's permanent. I don't think that's ever going to change. I think that companies like ChatGPT is already working on putting out ads so that they can inject ads into the answers. But that's going to be pay to play. If you're a shop like me, I would have to pay ChatGPT to put those ads in. And that's terrible. That's renting eyeballs. It's not sustainable profitable for a small consultancy like me. My Tea Got Cold says, should I expect my usage of the index term or the query hint with ForeSeek? Should I expect that usage to increase as table size increases? No. He says, 3 times this month I've had performance emergencies because SQL Server decided to scan terabyte tables that it usually seeks. No, there are a few things at play here. One is your search filters are hitting parameter sniffing. So sometimes they're bringing back large amounts of data. Sometimes they're bringing back small amounts of data. I have classes on that. You can go to brentozar.com, click on training up at the top, and I got classes on how to solve parameter sniffing issues in lots of different interesting ways. That's one thing that it can be. Another thing that it can be is that you may not be purging out history, that you may have a ton of history inside there. And that can also affect the performance of query plans. Like if you don't need old data, you want to archive that out because it can actually make a difference to the number of rows that have to get evaluated. And if SQL Server makes bad guesses on those, just because the table size has grown, so now it expects larger numbers, that it may think that a higher percentage of the table will end up being scanned or will end up being returned. Thus, key lookups will be less effective. Time to check out my training classes on parameter sniffing, because that definitely isn't the right solution long term. I should say, if it's getting the job done for you, that's cool. But if you're doing it three times a month, I go, I think you ought to learn about some other tools that are available to you that will be more flexible when you actually do need to scan the table. Next up, Wombat asks, I'm having the error of the beast, error code 666. Dropping and recreating the index may resolve this, otherwise use another clustering key. It says, my Google foo failed me. How do I figure out what the real cause is, like which index need to be fixed? You want to run the command dbcc check db. This checks for corruption. And you're going to want to run it with an additional command called extended logical checks. And what it does is it compares every table and every index to each other to make sure that the data in the index is actually accurate and reflects the data in the table. This does take longer, I would argue, and in our free corruption training classes out on YouTube, our CheckDB classes, if you search for Brentozar CheckDB, we got a bunch of free videos out on YouTube that walk you through how to do it. I would argue that that's something that you should be running all the time, that should be part of your regular CheckDB. Regular CheckDB tries to walk the balance between getting its job done quickly and finding all possible errors. Unfortunately, you've hit the point where you're hitting errors, so now it's time to run that extended logical checks. Next up, Andrew Kaufman says, I've been asked to explore switching the operating system for our SQL servers over to Red Hat Linux. The reasons are cost, consistency, because our other servers already use Linux, and security. I have a lot of experience and tools with Windows. How would you make a decision? Sounds to me like your manager's not really asking you a question. Sounds to me, I haven't heard your manager's emails, but it sounds to me like your manager is gently giving you a hint. It sounds to me like your manager is kind of like your spouse is saying, hey, something's starting to smell in here and I think it's coming from the trash. That is a gentle hint telling you, get up off your lazy bum, stop watching concert videos on YouTube and go take the trash out. So I would start your process on learning Red Hat Linux, assuming that you want to stay at that company, because it'll also make you more valuable as an employee if everything else that they're doing is in Linux. Would I give that suggestion to someone whose company is not majority Linux and whose manager isn't dropping the hint? Of course not. It's easier for you, for your consistent experience, for the tools that you already have, to stick with what you have and know, but your manager is making that decision for you. The call is coming from inside the house. Chris says, hi Brent, hope you're enjoying your time away. I am. If you were, and I will get back to work, I promise you, I got about 2 weeks left of vacation and then I get back to work. If you worked for an employer and had the option of working from home, working from the office, or some hybrid of the two, which would you choose? Oh, that is really interesting. I love people. The pandemic, I used to think I was kind of antisocial, but the pandemic really taught me that I love people. I love interacting with people in person, and it's very fulfilling for me. If you're lucky enough to have a job where you can have a good relationship with your coworkers without having to meet them and see them in person, then I would prefer working remotely and having lots of hobbies where I go out and talk to other people. Like my developer, Richie Rump, and I knew each other from in-person interactions before I even hired him, and we have a great working relationship. We don't see each other for years on end. I think it's been 2 or 3 years since I've seen Richie in person. And we both work remotely. We chat all the time over Slack. We have a good productive relationship. But if I were to hire someone, a stranger, that's more challenging if I've never seen them before. Similarly, if I was going to take a job again, I would either want to know the people already so that I had a good rapport and credibility with them and I had good personal bonds with them and enjoyed working with them. Or if I didn't, I would either want to work from the office like 1 or 2 days a week, maybe all the way up to full time, until I had that good personal bond with them, and then I would taper those numbers down. Am I saying that in-person is the only way to build bonds? Not at all. I have plenty of online-only friends that I see, that I met online, that I see online, and that I only ever see every now and then at conferences. But if my livelihood, my paycheck, depended on me getting great results from my coworkers and my coworkers getting great results from me, if that's on the line, I want to build that as quickly as possible. And because I'm a more of a people person, it's easier for me to do that in person. Could I do it entirely remotely? Sure, it would just take longer, but I would be more worried about getting it up and running quickly. Should I take another question? How long have I been going? I've been going for 20 minutes. Holy smokes. I have to walk the balance between, like, I could sit and talk to y'all for a really long time, and we have the time here, there's no noise, whatever. But I have to upload this video. And this video is in 8K, like 8K resolution, because it uses two cameras on this Insta360, filming everything that's happening all around me. So the videos for this end up being like 20 gigs in size for a 20-minute video. It's like a gigabyte per minute worth of video that gets uploaded onto YouTube. And uploading a 20-gigabyte video on cruise ship Wi-Fi, they got Starlink here, but that is still not going to happen. There's just no way that that's going to work. So I got to walk the balance between I want to sit and talk to you forever, but also I have to be able to push this up. So what's going to happen is that I'm going to debark in Miami, and you're going to laugh. I go get on another cruise. So this is true. There's a reason behind this. So I might as well talk about it for a minute. So it's a friend of mine's birthday, and he picked this groove cruise. Raheem, love him to death, wonderful human being. And Raheem said, I want to go on this groove cruise for my birthday. We're like, we're in. We go on vacations with Raheem all the time. Raheem and his husband, Michelle, are just fantastic people. And all their whole family's great. I just love hanging out with them. Like my adopted Las Vegas family. And after this cruise of 4 days nonstop dance music, he said, next, let's go hang out in Miami for a week and go clubbing. And I said, absolutely not. 4 days of dance music on a cruise ship is going to be overwhelming enough. After that, you know, we'll go fly back home. He said, okay, wait. So it turns out nobody else wanted to do that either. He said, after that, how about we get off this cruise and we go get on a Disney cruise? Raheem is a big Disney fan. And I said, okay, now you're talking, because I could do like a 4 or 5 day detox cruise after this one. And a Disney cruise will actually be relaxing, as opposed to last night. We were up watching John Summit until midnight. Summit set closed, I think, at 11 p.m. Yeah, that's probably not right. No, I think Summit's set closed much earlier. I think it was like 9 or 10 p.m. And then there was another DJ after that, and then we came back on the boat and all kinds of... Anyway, total... People watch DJ sets here until after sunrise. Like this particular amphitheater, the DJs go until past sunrise, and so there's sunrise sets. Tonight, we ride back into Miami, and the DJs go on until 8 a.m., so all overnight. And so a lot of people are sleeping right now so that they can party the whole entire night, then stumble off the cruise ship with their bags and go get on planes going home like zombies. One of the people, announcers here, always talks about sleep when you're dead. So we get off this cruise ship in Miami. We go hop in a car and go drive over to Fort Lauderdale, where we get on the Disney cruise. My cell phone won't let me upload a 20 gigabyte video. So I got to figure out how I'm going to go stop at like an office store somewhere that's going to have blazing fast gigabit Wi-Fi. Boy, it really makes you miss home. I may not, depending on how the schedule goes, I may not even be able to upload this until after I get back home in Vegas. We'll see. So anyway, hope you had fun and learned something in this episode. I will see you on the next version of Office Hours. Adios.